Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. We're also brought to you by Houseboats.com, your home for houseboat rentals on Shasta Lake. Coming up, we're going to talk to former Giants pitcher Bill Lasky, who now works as an analyst for NBC Sports Bay Area and talk show host on KNBR 680. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your two-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. And joining us now, the man who was on the air for many, many hours over this past weekend on KNBR and on NBC Sports Bay Area, Bill Lasky. Bill, I mean, is your voice okay for this podcast? You were on the air for a gazillion hours.
Well, it was good. I was a little surprised at how long that Saturday was on KNBR, but it was fulfilling, and I hung in there real well, Joe.
Well, a couple of really good games in the Bay Bridge series, and the Giants end up sweeping. And, you know, this is the kind of season it's been where, you know, they get swept in Chicago, and you think, oh, well, it's just over for them after that. But they come back, and they sweep a really good A's team and a couple of really exciting games, too.
They sure did. And, you know, even in Wrigley Field, some of those games are really that 12-11 bash, who was going to hit last, and then end up the Cubs beating them in the bottom of the eighth. And then a 1-0 game, Samardzija threw a heck of a game, a two-hitter, and they lose 1-0. And then the day off comes. And always when the day off comes, you forget about the things that happened the day before. And sure enough, they came into the Oakland Coliseum. And Oakland, so phenomenal, they took 3 out of 4 from Houston. They swept the Yankees. So they were riding pretty high. And it was a good game, that first game, until the eighth inning. And then, sure enough, the Giants just took over. Had 9 batters come up in the eighth inning, and of course, Stephen Vogt with the 3-run home run had the icing on the cake. And then yesterday, a good ball game where they tied it up and then fell behind 4-2. And sure enough, Longoria just had a great game yesterday, and they pull out a win. And of course, the Battle of the Bay trophy comes to San Francisco now.
That's right. Well, you know, that was the first time that Vogt had ever faced Ryan Buchter, and he hits that home run. And Vogt is not a guy who's going to stand there and watch a home run. He immediately drops the bat and starts running, whatever he hits. It doesn't matter what it is. So it was very surprising to see a pitch come up at the head of Vogt in the game on Sunday, and Vogt was very upset. We saw him very animated after that happened during the game. And then he even told the media that he knows what he did. So basically, you know, he is saying that it was intentional, even though he says, I'm not going to say it was intentional. So all that happened, and it, very interesting because there's no history there. They had not faced each other before that home run.
None at all. And, you know, you never throw somebody's head. In any kind of error in baseball, you never take a guy's head off. If you're going to drill him, you drill him in the back, you drill him in the leg. But there was no reason for it. As you just said, Stephen Vogt hit the home run. He put the bat down. He started sprinting. There was no sitting at home plate watching it. There was no bat flip like Kanye did. And it was professionally done. Stephen Vogt's been a professional player on both sides of the bay. And I didn't understand it. And I would have been upset, too. And Vogt, no doubt, stared him down once the helmet came off. And anytime you throw at somebody's head, you're looking at injury, a possible injury for life. And there was nonsense. There was no sense of doing that on Buchter's part.
You know, Stephen Vogt has been such a major contributor on this Giants team. I don't think that we saw it coming. I mean, we know he's a good player. He was an all-star before. But, you know, he's coming back from an injury when he was with the Brewers. And the Giants wouldn't even be in contention without a guy like that. He is helping them so much. I mean, did you see that coming? What have you thought about his season from the beginning to now?
Well, I'm glad because, you know, when he came into spring training, that shoulder injury he had kept him out of the whole 2018 season, and that was with the Milwaukee Brewers. And the Giants brought him in, and it was really a free pass to see, hey, can you still do this? We'd love to have you work with our young pitchers. And sure enough, that came to fashion. as he started in Sacramento, he got to understand some of these young guys like Beattie and Rodriguez and Suarez and Sean Anderson. And those were all positive things to get him into that kind of fatherly figure, you know, kind of listen to me and how I'm going to help you get over the hump to get to that next level. And I'm seeing more that Bruce Bochy's putting him behind the plate. Of course, yesterday he caught Logan Webb and Posey was the DH. And I really believe the younger guys it's not like they're going against Posey. Buster's a fantastic catcher and he's a lead dog too, but Stephen Vogt's got that image in him where you can come talk to me. Let's talk about, you know, setting up hitters. Let's talk about game plan. And I'm not saying nothing negative about Buster. Buster does it too. But when you get a fatherly figure like that where you can go and just start talking, what's bothering you? What can I do to get better? Stephen Vogt's that guy.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Vogt has really outplayed Posey as far as offensive numbers are concerned. I don't know what happened to Posey. I mean, yesterday, of course, was really a low, going 0 for 5 with 4 strikeouts and a double play ball. And now he's hitting under 250. He only has 6 homers, 34 RBIs. Can you pinpoint at all what's going on with Posey and why he's not hitting the way he's capable of?
You know, I just think he hits in streaks, just like Brandon Belt. When they get hot, you always see that Buster Posey patent base hit to right center field, or he'll hit the gap with it, or he'll start pulling the ball. You saw signs of this at different parts of this season, but he's just hasn't gotten on a roll where he's been successful, you know, 4, 5, 6 series in a row. And I don't know if it's still the hip. You keep thinking about the hip, you know, when you swing the bat, how the hip opens up, and we don't know if that still has any problems with his swing, but he just hasn't been the Buster Posey of earlier years this year.
Yeah, it just seems like his timing is off, Bill. I mean, it just seems like he's not squaring up the ball. A lot of times he's just kind of hitting a ground ball to shortstop or kind of topping the ball. And, you know, I mean, he could tell us more than we can analyze that, but I don't know if he's seeing it great. I mean, there's a lot of ways I guess you could sort of look at it, right?
Yeah, and yesterday with 4 strikeouts, you just don't see Buster Posey striking out 4 times in a game. And a couple times where he came up with bases loaded and he struck out. And he usually puts the ball in play or at least drives the ball for an RBI. And, of course, Longoria picks him up with a base hit through the hole. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Of course, you and I aren't hitting coaches, and maybe there's just a timing issue. You just don't know. Buster Posey's that kind of hitter. He's a professional hitter. He should be able to figure it out. Yesterday, it just didn't look good with him at bat.
More with Bill Lasky right after this. If you're thinking about a fun vacation, how about renting a houseboat on beautiful Shasta Lake? That's right. Just go to houseboats.com, where they offer houseboat vacations on Shasta Lake. They also rent cabins as well as wakeboard, day cruising, fishing, pontoon, and party boats. Food and beverage service, fueling, brand name clothing, souvenirs, and a grocery store are all available at their modern marinas. Jones Valley Resort and Silverthorne Resort are the premier boating destinations on Shasta Lake, and houseboats.com will set you up there. Houseboats.com has the best service, the best boats, and the best locations. Call 877-468-7326 or go to houseboats.com today. You know, Mike Yastrzemski went into a little bit of a slide lately, but he was on fire for so long, and it was like what you talked about, where, you know, guys just get on a roll, and then maybe they slow down a little bit. But, man, he has really come into his own this year. Another guy who's, you know, a surprise because he had spent all that time in the minor leagues, but he has been just so clutch. I look at Yastrzemski and Pillar as being really the two best clutch players that they have on this team.
Well, Pillar's been fantastic defensively, offensively, driving in runs. He's got career numbers and home runs, RBIs, a leader with the hit board, becoming a leader in the dugout. You see him talking to so many players and, you know, the speed on the bases, a clutch fly ball that Vogt hit in the short center field, and he slides under the tag yesterday. Just a great player. And you talk about Farhan and some of the bad moves, but you don't give him credit on some of the good moves. And Pillar was a great steal from Toronto, picking up Yastrzemski, giving him an opportunity. Slater sitting in AAA for almost half the year. Him coming up, having a great year so far, coming up with some clutch pinch hits. And then you just, like we said, picking up Vogt and giving him an opportunity. There's been so many players. Dickerson, you start looking at the pitching staff, giving Coonrod an opportunity, and he's come up and shut the door. So, you know, if you're in the minor leagues, especially AAA, and you're getting an opportunity like you're doing, all you have to do is be successful and be consistent, and you're a big part of this big league team.
Well, yeah, on the pitching side, speaking of, you know, trying to be a big part of the team, Logan Webb, that first start was pretty good. You know, yesterday, not quite as good, but he's a young guy with great stuff. What do you want to see from Webb going forward?
I think the biggest thing with all these young starters, Joe, is making that bad pitch, making that one bad pitch where you miss a corner and you hit a center cut breaking ball. It should be on the outside corner. It cuts right across. Or a fastball when you're ahead of a hitter and you put a center cut fastball. Beedy, one thing. That's one of his biggest problems. Electric stuff, but he always makes that one bad pitch, and these big league hitters don't miss it. You saw it earlier in the year. You saw it at Wrigley Field. He gets ahead, has a couple good innings, and then he has a down inning. Yesterday, Logan Webb comes out in the first inning, throws 9 pitches, 6 strikes, 1-2-3. Kanya hits him for a home run. Then he gives up a couple pretty good pitches where they were hits. The changeup, Profar hits down the left field line, and then an inside-out double, and then he hangs a pitch. You know, and you start thinking, okay, now I'm in trouble again. Now I want to make that perfect pitch. And sure enough, that perfect pitch comes right over the plate and it gets hammered. So I think these young starters literally just have to go hitter to hitter and see if you can continue to stay ahead of the hitters and make corner pitches and maybe elevate. Derek Rodriguez had a great start in Arizona, did exactly that. Comes into Wrigley Field, walks the first guy, home run, gives up the 2-run lead. All these starters that are getting opportunities, they have that one inning where they get in trouble and they give up the big hit.
You know, I guess you could think back to when you were pitching, Bill. It's got to be really hard mentally to come back from an outing like that, or, you know, some kind of a bad inning. Beedy seems like the guy who has the mental capability to do it, but we're all human beings, and you lose confidence if you end up giving up a couple of home runs and you just start wondering, like, what's going on here?
I think the word you just said is confidence. I think these guys have to build on confidence and figure out how I continue to keep consistent. You do it in the minor leagues. You've done it in college. You did it in high school. So what is it in your head that's not consistently going out there with a clear head and constantly looking at blueprints of what you did good and try to do the same? And I think these guys are putting too much pressure on themselves, and they're trying to make perfect pitches, and the outcome is just the opposite. So confidence in what your stuff is, and confidence to work the corners as well as your blueprint on the scouting report you get before you go on that mound.
Yeah, man, I think about a veteran guy in the bullpen like a Tony Watson who was struggling there for a while. I mean, he went like 4 outings where you just wondered what is going on with him. He's not locating. He's all over the place. And somehow he figures it out because he doesn't get down on himself somehow. These veteran guys who are successful, they keep their confidence going.
You know, Joe, I think one of the biggest things of being a veteran is you slow the game down and you figure out, what am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? Where the rookie is that fast-paced thought. And I just want to throw this fastball here instead of taking a deep breath, figuring out, okay, how do I get that fastball in the outside corner? Watson yesterday was spectacular. 3 up, 3 down, hit the corners, nice changeup, and he figured it out. And sometimes the game is so fast, and we always keep talking about it. But when you're on the mound and you have 30, 40,000 people in there in both games of the Coliseum, you got to forget about all that. And you really got to block it out where you and the catcher are the only ones there. It's hard to do, but I tell you what, once you figure it out, it all comes to fashion, because next thing you know, all you're doing is looking at the glove, you're looking at the hitter, you're making adjustments. Tony Watson did it, and that's a veteran pitcher. Now, these are young guys, when they have a bad inning, I like what Webb did. He came right back in that third inning, had a nice 1-2-3 inning. So when you go in that dugout, you got to cut this, let it go and figure out, hey, I'm going back out there next inning. I got to put a 0 on the board. That's what I'd like to see more of the rookies do as we finish up the month of August and moving into September.
You know, one of the best parts of the Bay Bridge series this year was there was a lot of talk about the 1989 World Series, of course, the anniversary of that, thinking about 30 years ago. And you did a great job, Bill, on KMBR, just interviewing a lot of players who were involved back then. And you know, going back, and you played with a lot of those players. You weren't on the 89 Giants team, but you were on a team a few years before that in San Francisco. So it must have been enjoyable to catch up with those players. Really a special group on both sides of the Bay that played in 1989 in the World Series.
I thought both the Giants and the A's did a great ceremony for both sides. Of course, the Giants did it a couple weekends ago when they had the 89 team. And, of course, Larry Bear came out and was excited to say Will Clark's number was going to be retired. And then yesterday, the same thing with Cavall did. He came out and said Dave Stewart's number was going to be retired. And both those players are the elite players in both organizations. Both organizations did a great job on both sides. And what Vida and I did Saturday, we tried to unite some players that played in both the uniforms. And Matt Williams, Mike Aldretti, Billy North, Barry Zito, some great names and some great interviews. We can hear it on a KNBR podcast if you want to pick that up. But some great memories of what happened during that series and some of the things that happened in that 10-day stretch when Faye Vincent kind of put everything on hold and then brought the World Series back. And, of course, the A's swept him in four games. But it was really devastating at that time. I lived here and saw all the devastation from the bridge to both sides of the Bay. And it was a tough time in Northern California. And of course, both teams came through with it and said some great stuff about how baseball united Oakland and San Francisco again.
Yeah, now you mentioned Will Clark and his number 22 getting retired. And I thought, you know, they might want to make that a joint number 22 because I thought Jack Clark was a special Giant as well. And you played with both. You played with both Jack and Will. I mean, Jack was one of my idols. I have to admit that. So I'm a little biased in just thinking that, you know, his name should be mentioned as well. What do you think?
I tell you what, Joe, Jack Clark was a bad dude, man. He'd walk around. He had that air of confidence around him. And everybody wanted to be Jack Clark coming in with his shiny sweatsuits on and driving all type of cars from, you know, Rolls Royces to Mercedes to Lamborghinis. I mean, he had a flock of cars. And I remember Atlee and Hammaker and I, we used to look at him and go, man, that is just a cool dude, you know. And he was just a bad kind of guy when he'd walk in the locker room. Everybody looked at him like he was the stud. And he was. I mean, he had a cannon for an arm. And he used to swing a light back and bat and swing it as hard as he could. And, you know, the candlestick winds, I bet you about 50 to 100 balls could have been out the ballpark. And he'd come in, the wind would blow it in for an out, and he'd come in cussing candlesticks. So like, why doesn't that wind blow out instead of blowing in? But, yeah, I agree. Jack Clark was a very good player. And I look at Will Clark, too, and he's sensational on and off the field with the Giants. Just a stellar kind of guy, too. And I can't say enough about both of them, but Will Clark is definitely my favorite. He's a class guy. He's done so much for so many different organizations to help out charities. And of course, autism being one that's so superior in his life, having a son that had it. And he's just the kind of guy you want to represent an organization. And he is thrilled. I've talked to him several times. That's a good one, Will the Thrill. And he's thrilled to have that number retired, and he's very gracious for it.
All right, to finish up, there was a lot of talk about the uniforms. In fact, Clayton Kershaw was criticizing the Dodgers-Yankees uniform choices there because, you know, it's a traditional rivalry, yet they're wearing the white and the black. And the same thing was happening here in the Bay Area. And what I was thinking when I saw the nicknames, I like the nicknames, but can't really read them on some of those uniforms, especially the white ones. But the funny thing I thought about it, Bill, was I was thinking about Johnny LeMaster. I don't know if you remember, but he went out to the field one time with Boo stitched on the back of his jersey. So I thought about that. I was like, he was ahead of his time. You know, he had that nickname on there way before they came up with Players Weekend.
Yeah, I remember that. And Murph tells a great story because Murph did it. And, of course, as soon as he did it, Tom Haller's screaming down there, get that off his jersey, get that off. Because, you know, Giant fans seem to boo him all the time. But he was one of the clutch shortstops. He was at great range, and he threw the ball extremely well at short. Of course, he's, you know, 220 lifetime hitter. But you know what? You're absolutely right. I like the nicknames. I wish baseball would tell the commentators a little bit more about the nicknames so they can, you know, tell you why, you know, Coonrod had coach on his, you know, and we're trying to speculate. But I wish they would expand on that a little bit more and telling the fans why they had the certain nickname on it. And the nickname idea, I love the uniforms. I didn't like it all. And once I watched the first game when it was Washington against the Cubs, and they said, oh, yeah, the Major League Baseball, every team's going to wear that. And I was shaking my head. I didn't even know it was Washington because you couldn't read the name on the chest. And then you started looking at who's on the lineup, and you're like, oh, this is the Nationals. You know, and that's how it was through the whole week. And then I found out that a couple home teams, the Baltimore Orioles, did it, as well as, I'm trying to think of the other team, where they took the black team. And they took the black uniforms as the home as the home team. And there was one other team that did it. The Orioles did it, and some other team did it. And it was like, wow, why would you do that? You would think you'd want the white uniforms. And, of course, the pitchers had to wear the black hat on the white uniform.
Yeah.
Of course, no white sleeves, of course. But I just think Major League Baseball dropped the ball on those uniforms.
By the way, you guys probably did this on the pre- or post-game show, and I may have missed it, but did you have a nickname for yourself that you would have put on your jersey if you were going out there?
Well, you know, Vita was always Vita. He's never going to change that. He's never going to go back to blue. Vita was always Vita. He was one of the first players ever to have his first name on a uniform. And, of course, my nickname through basketball days was Tree, from the Tree Rollins days. I got to meet Tree Rollins when I was in seventh grade, and my buddy was standing right next to me. He goes, you're Tree, too. You're Tree, too. And so, of course, that stuck. And, you know, it was great. I mean, I got to meet Tree Rollins later on when I was pitching with the Giants when we went through Atlanta, and he was at the game. And I went over to him, and he signed a baseball for me and told him the whole story. And he's one big dude. Let me tell you, he was about 6'8", 6'9". He was huge. But just a nickname that stuck with me forever. And that's probably what I would put on it. But
you could have had the Stanford logo with it, right?
Yeah, there you go. But, the other name that always stuck to me was Lask from Lasky. That was a baseball nickname that a lot of people still call me. So, but it was good, Joe. What would you have on your jersey?
Mine would be Virus, because I got that nickname a long time ago with my computer sending out a virus that ruined a friend of mine's computer. So that's why I ended up with the sports virus for the Twitter and the
good.
Website
that's
and all
fine.
That. Yeah,
very
so that's
good.
What I would
very
have
good.
On there. And people be going, why? What the heck is that?
Everybody, stay away from them.
Stay away from them, yeah. Catch it.
That's it.
All right, Bill. Hey, thanks a lot. Really appreciate the time. And good luck the rest of the season. And keep those hours going. They got to start paying you overtime for weekends like the last one.
No, I got to put some lozenger. Maybe I can get a sponsor for lozengers to keep that throat nice and clear.
All right, take care, Bill.
All right, Joe, thanks.
That's Bill Lasky. Join us again next week for another edition of Inside China Basin. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening on thesportsvirus.com.